Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. Not a great day for Alaska Airlines, but a way worse one for Boeing. That is what's trending.
What's trending? Safety first.
This morning, 7:50, the FAA put a ground stop advisory on Alaska Airlines. It lasted for like 10 seconds or something, and then it was just over. But didn't really matter how long it was, because it just adds to the feelings, not necessarily based in fact, that people I fear are starting to have about Alaska Airlines as a brand. Now, there was nothing to freak out about at the end of this. I mean, it went from 7:50 to 8:30, and it caused delays. 100%, it caused delays. It caused a lot, maybe consternation for flyers. It applied to all Alaska mainline and subcarrier flights. Alaska immediately put out a statement saying, "This morning, we experienced an issue while performing an upgrade to the system that calculates our weight and balance. A ground stop for all Alaska and Horizon flights was instituted as a result." Now, this didn't seem to be a big deal. They got it figured out. No one was in danger. However, it's bad optics, and it contributes to how people are going to view this brand, because you have enough negative stories in a row, people start thinking of things, then it becomes part of the subconscious. And it's not that I think the next time someone wants to fly somewhere, they're saying, "Oh, anywhere but Alaska Airlines, honey, get us tickets anywhere other than Alaska." No, but I do think that when making a choice and they see Alaska and Delta and Southwest, they might end up going for Delta or Southwest first. They might not even be consciously thinking that, just because Alaska is starting to get that kind of reputation. Should it? No. Like I said, I don't think they deserve any of, at least in the last several months, any of the negative press. It wasn't their fault. It wasn't. Including the dude who was on mushrooms or coming down from a high on mushrooms and tried to crash a plane. That's not Alaska's fault. That was the individual's fault. But at some point, you do end up feeling damaged. Do I think we're at a point where it's like forever a lost cause? No, of course not. I'm starting to think a little bit differently about Boeing, though. I'm not going to pretend. It's kind of hard to ignore, at this point, another whistleblower who thankfully was able to testify before he was murdered. You know, you think he was...
That's a relief.
You think he was like, "I'm going to sleep in the congressional office that my... Who's my representative? Does he have a spare bed? Because sometimes they sleep in their office. Can I just stay there? Can I? Okay, cool. Just say, what room are we in tomorrow? I'll just camp out there. You know, I just want to make sure I get a good seat. Sir, you're the witness. You're going to be seated at the front. You know, you can never be too careful. Let me just stay there." So his name is Sam Salapour. He is a whistleblower who said today that the 787 Dreamliner has to stop being produced because of all these different safety issues. Among them, he says that they have yet to properly address tiny non-conforming gaps found in multiple planes after two sections of their fuselages were joined together during assembly. Now, some of you are probably saying, what does that mean? And the answer is quite simple. It's that there are tiny non-conforming gaps that have been found in multiple planes after two sections of their fuselages were joined together during assembly. Does that make sense? Did I say it that way?
I think so.
Okay, perfect. I just want to make sure, because it could be confusing to some. So I just wanted to define all of that. He says, we're at a point where, you know, we're going to have to maybe get another grounding, but specifically on these. He spoke today in front of the Congress.
"I want to make clear that I have raised these issues over 3 years. I was ignored. I was told not to create delays. I was told, frankly, to shut up. At one point, Boeing management got sick of me and raising these issues and moved me out of the 787 program into this 777 program."
But I mean, at some point, negative Nancy over there, all he's doing, "Oh, the plane's going to crash. Don't put it out there."
Nobody likes a complainer.
Oh, just nonstop. Can you put a smile on your face? No, not when people are going to die. Oh, so enough with the negativity.
Someone's got a case on the Mondays.
Oh, every day.
On the 777 program, I found problems. Again, I found that Boeing started a new process to build the airplane without taking into the consideration of the design of the airplane and how the airplane was designed. As a result, I witnessed severe misalignment when the planes were assembled. Boeing manufacturing used unmeasured and unlimited amount of force to correct the misalignment. And this also weakens the airplane in the long run. I literally saw people jumping on the pieces of the airplane to get them to align. I call it the Tarzan effect, among other improper methods.
Why is that a Tarzan effect?
Yeah, I didn't really understand that part either.
I mean, if he was swinging from a vine and then landing
on the
piece.
Yeah, then that would make more sense.
Okay. Maybe they were wearing that, whatever that, what is that called?
What?
The, like the one sleeve over the shoulder.
Like a sash? Or
is that what, is it a sash? It's not a sash. It was a full.
Yeah. Right? I know. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Whatever that thing, maybe that's what they were wearing. But really, it was just toga night at the local frat house, and that's actually what they were in. He also said he received a lot of physical threats to not come forward with the information.
Again, I raised concerns internally. I was sidelined. I was told to shut up. I received physical threats. My boss said, I would have killed someone who said what you said in a meeting.
Okay, that's I'm not really going to go. I'm not down with that being a physical threat. Right? Right?
It's hyperbole.
Yeah, just a little bit. You know, I always, in the back of my mind, because I don't believe that we should just automatically assume that because we're labeling someone a whistleblower that they even know what it is they're talking about. Alexander Vindman comes to mind. And this guy could be a genius who figured something out, or he's a big dum-dum. And the reason why they chose to ignore him and tell him to shut up and say, God, if you say it again, I'm going to strangle you. That's not a threat. It's just you're annoying at that point. It might just be because they did look into it. It's not accurate. And he's not shutting up about it. I mean, that's also a possibility. Now, what it is, I have no idea. I obviously don't know. They say over at Boeing that all is fine. But then again, I would expect them to say that. NBC News talked to a former FAA safety investigator named Jeff Guzzetti. You know Jeff. Good guy.
Yeah.
Guzzetti. I mean, he's a little bit of a talker, but, you know, we like him. He said, quote, even if these cracks would form, which there's no evidence of, the airplane is so resistant and so structurally robust, according to Boeing, that they're not going to break apart. Now, should we be concerned about saying, according to Boeing? Yeah, of course, they're the ones who are being accused here. And they have not given us any reason to just automatically trust anything they say right now. Sorry, that's a reality. I don't like bashing local companies unless I don't like them. Then I'll happily bash them, I guess. So I do like bashing local companies, but I don't feel the need to bash Boeing unnecessarily. There needs to be an independent third-party review that goes and looks at all of this because it's possible that both are correct, that yes, there's some weirdness with the alignment, and yes, they are structurally sound anyway. That's obviously possible. And let's also be fair, if there were significant issues that could bring down a plane, it would have brought down a plane, right? And I get that not everything will happen immediately. You're just increasing your risks. Doesn't mean it's ever going to happen. It just means you have a slightly higher chance of something going wrong than you would had you fixed this issue. Again, I don't know. But this is yet another story that has come forward with yet another person who's calling themselves a whistleblower, who have been established as a whistleblower. And it starts to seep into the psyche of the average person who, again, the next time they go looking for a flight, if they say, never mind, I'm just not going to fly this time. And enough people do that. and any of the airlines find out, because they're constantly sending out surveys to customers, they're doing research with potential flyers, and they ask these kinds of questions. And if it comes out with all the research, yeah, people just have a general unease with Boeing. Yeah, well, then they go to Airbus. It could happen that quickly. And not that quickly in the sense of overnight. No, it's going to take some time if we ever get there. But they're not going to wait and wait and wait. And they're not going to try to defend Boeing if it's cheaper for them to just go ahead and move with Airbus. Even if they don't think Boeing is at fault for anything, they could still say, well, perception is all that matters. And the perception right now is that Boeing is not a safe company, or not a company that takes safety seriously. And if they're at that point where just that's what the perception is, that's what the perception is. Delta, Alaska, Southwest, all these, they're not going to be spending money doing press for Boeing if it's cheaper for them to just go with Airbus, which, to the best of my knowledge, hasn't had these kinds of concerns. Certainly not that we've heard in this country. Now, do they have more Airbuses in Europe? Yeah. I feel like we would probably hear those stories too, but we just haven't. But at the end of the day, man, if I'm Boeing, I'm getting out there daily to explain how you're ensuring everything that's being done is checked and double checked and triple checked and quadruple checked. The CEO themselves go down and says, okay, I don't like this fuselage. Give me that wrench. And then tightens it. I don't think I would. It's the guy, right? If it's the guy I'm thinking of, who's the CEO? Because I don't know. I wouldn't give him a wrench. I don't think he can. I don't think he has the upper body strength to do that. But my next guest does. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
As we told you last hour, the Bob Ferguson campaign is kind of acting the way you might expect a concerned campaign to act, going after the challenger, smearing him, in this case, Dave Reichert, former King County Sheriff, former congressman. The campaign put out a tweet yesterday that had a breaking news tag towards it, a breaking news tag for a video that somehow managed to become a political ad campaign. But in it, it shows from February 21st, Dave Reichert telling a group of Republicans that he believes marriage is between a man and a woman. Now, this is not a campaign issue. He was simply talking about his religious beliefs that are shared by a lot of folks that Bob Ferguson isn't attacking. Joining me on the line to discuss is Dave Reichert. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Thanks, Jason. Happy to be on.
So the video that was posted was without any context. It was obviously edited. In fact, it was edited from a nearly hour-long event. So what can you tell us about the context of the conversation?
So the event was, as you said, a Republican event. I was in the process of telling my life story. People want to get to know you a little bit. So starting kind of with my childhood, running away from home, living in domestic violence, a situation when I was in high school. And once I was done with my presentation, the questions were allowed. And one young woman asked what my definition of a man and a woman was and marriage. And I said, well, I'm a man and my wife is a woman. And I believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. The second question she asked was whether I thought transgender people should be able to compete against women and females in women's sports. And I said, no, this is a women's rights issue, and they should not be allowed to compete against women.
Which is where the vast majority of the country stands. I mean, I remember the Gallup poll from last year, almost, 71%, I think, of the American people hold exactly that position when it comes to competition, which ironically, Bob Ferguson did not include in his video, presumably because he didn't really want to get into that particular issue, because it's not very popular, perhaps even here in Washington State. But they're obviously attacking you as someone who is now a bigot who doesn't like gay people. You're speaking to one. Apparently, you don't like me. And that you were speaking out about policy and not your religious beliefs. But you were talking about your religious beliefs.
Yes. And, you know, what's interesting is I just find this so disingenuous because, you know, as a police officer for 33 years, I protected everyone. I didn't stop and ask what your political affiliation was, what your religious belief was, what your, you know, what your personal beliefs are on any issue. I look at people as children of God, all created by the same God, all created equal. My job to protect everyone. In fact, I want to share this story with you, and I'm hoping that maybe some of your listeners might even have attended this meeting a number of years ago. I was asked to appear before a group of people from the LGBTQ+ community up on Broadway when I was running for my second term as sheriff, and to seek their endorsement. I went to this meeting and full uniform, sat down in the meeting. There were probably 20 plus people there, and the process was go around the room, ask a question of the sheriff. He'll answer the question. Moderator said that obviously we're not going to be in total agreement on everything. We went around, we get to one woman who says, you know, what is your view on marriage? I shared the same view. I'm a Christian, and this is my view. And she became angry. And the moderator was a little bit embarrassed and said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we said that we would be respectful to the sheriff, realizing that we aren't going to agree on every point, and let's move on to the next person. Well, we moved on, and the next person started their question, and I asked the moderator, could I just go back to this person just for a moment, because that's something important I'd like to share. And I looked at the woman and around the room, and I said, look, we may not agree on this issue, but I will tell you right now, when this meeting ends and all of us in this room walk out onto Broadway, and if any one of you in this room had your life threatened by anyone on that street, I would sacrifice my life for you. And you could have heard a pin drop in that room.
I bet.
That's what I believe. And that's how, you know, I have my own personal belief, but I believe that everyone is created equal, and I will defend your right to make your choice, and whatever choice that is for your life, I will defend that with my life, because I have when I was a police officer. And I have that same passion today.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, literally no one is talking about this issue as a political issue. Literally, yeah. No one is saying that we need to go back in time and reverse the case law. No one is saying the Supreme Court was wrong. This literally has not come up at all for years and years and years. The only thing that has come up are the transgender related issues, particularly around sports participation. And yet again, should just point out, even though you're the one being accused of, quote unquote, erasing transgender people. And I believe Bob Ferguson, in a statement to The Stranger, said you deny their existence. You actually were at least talking about the issue. Do you deny the existence of trans people?
No, this is going to be this guy's tactic in this entire campaign.
Yep.
Is to say things about Dave Reichert that are lies, and to say things about Dave Reichert that I would never do. And that's going to be his whole campaign. It's going to be lies, deception.
Yep.
And that's the kind of governor that you can expect, because if he's going to start lying and deceiving people and spreading fear with the words that he used on this issue on social media, When in fact, I also heard that because the comments weren't so positive in his direction, he's now shut down the comment page on that video, but left the video up. This is a man that is weak and is disingenuous, to say the least, deceptive, to really be descriptive, I think would be a strong term to use. I think people know me well enough that, look, I just want to serve. I just want to make a difference. I want to get us back to where we're safe on the streets, where we can help our people who are our neighbors and friends who are strung out on fentanyl and dying. That's where my passion comes from. And that includes everyone in our community across the state.
Do you have any concerns on just on this last point? Do you have any concerns on this issue when it relates to media? I noted the Seattle Times decided to embed the campaign ad from Bob Ferguson in its story, chose not to just put up the video, including all the context in which it had access to and had been posted by the time the Seattle Times had published their story. So it seems like this was kind of their version of an in-kind donation.
Sort of an expected process, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, sort of. It didn't surprise me one bit. They called, said that they had something they needed us to answer a question. Didn't share with us that they had a video. Didn't give us the context of what we were responding to, hoping to catch us in some sort of a contradictory statement, I suppose. But look, I'm Jason, you know me. I'm going to be honest with the people here in Washington State. I want to have an honest and open government. And I know that's said by some politicians and some have said it in this state, and it's never happened. I intend for it to happen. Some of my employees over the past years in the sheriff's office and in Congress have been gay, lesbian people, and they're posting online too, telling their story about working for Dave and, you know, what how we interact with people. No one asks the question. No one cares. It's your ideas, your thoughts on the issues and solutions to the problems as a community, you know, as everyone being a part of the community and coming together and treating people with respect wherever you come from.
This is a contrived issue, but at least they tried, you know. They gave it the old good college try, I guess. And I'll note the irony that you are attacked now for being a quote-unquote MAGA Republican on the left, and then folks on the far right will say you're not MAGA Republican enough, so you might be doing something right, I suppose. We've been talking with Dave Reichert. He is running for governor. His website that you can learn a little bit more about the campaign, see how you might want to give back to it, ReichertForGovernor.com. It's all spelled out, ReichertForGovernor.com. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No, Jason, thank you for having me. Appreciate it, too.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Don't forget, the IRS is getting very aggressive. If you owe money, you should immediately reach out to Greg Nunn. He's our local tax expert and advocate at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. He's going to help you. Google N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution.
Wake up, lazy. Get up at 6 a.m. and join us and learn whether or not a well-trained crew of thieves is taking down legal pot growths in the South Sound. Thursday morning on The Brian Suit Show.
Snoqualmie, Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is The Big Local on The Jason Rand Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for The Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We return to the city of Redmond because folks aren't giving up on pushing back, or at least shining a giant spotlight on what the city government decided to do in moving forward without any public hearing moving forward with a land transfer to the county, which then allowed Plymouth Housing to gain control over this massive 100-unit permanent supportive housing facility. This is for the chronically homeless. This is a low barrier shelter. They'll say otherwise. I've never, ever, ever, ever seen a Plymouth Housing unit that doesn't abide by the harm reduction model. They say it on their website. And people are mad that they weren't even told that this was snuck in. And that's exactly what happened. They snuck it in. Angela Burney, the mayor of Redmond, and that council decided they did not care what Redmond residents had to say. They do not care. They're all heroes, and they're providing housing to the quote-unquote unhoused, which means they just solved homelessness for the 100 people who are now inside of the facility or will eventually be inside of the facility, despite there not being any rules concerning someone having to go in to say, oh, I don't know, let me pick something completely at random that kind of sometimes impacts homeless addiction. They don't have to go into any kind of detox at all. When they're ready, they're ready. They'll do it. If they're not ready, which they probably won't be, they'll continue to use and ultimately just die in that homeless hotel room. So about 50 people showed up last night to City Hall, and Como News was there.
They just expected them with a brand new apartment just to hop into regular life. That is not realistic.
It was a real hurry. It didn't have to be that way.
The thing is that those 100 people are already here. I see them when I'm at the library or at the grocery store or near the freeway.
Maybe we should, you know, I don't know, get at the underlying cause of their homelessness. That could actually help. And the thing is, so I actually talk to homeless people because I go out into the field. I was actually with We Heart Seattle yesterday checking out one particular encampment. Got a lot of video. You'll hear from them in the next week or so. I have to put it all together. But what becomes clear after talking to numerous homeless people, this is what they say they want. Help. Then you offer it to them and then they say no. To almost every single person, they will say, oh yeah, I want help, but not that kind of help. Yeah, I want help, but not this kind of help. The only kind of help I'll accept is this. So let me tell you, right now, I've got you a place in a facility, but you have to go into detox. Will you do it right now? No, I'm just not ready. Okay. Why aren't you ready? I'm just not ready. What are you doing with that tin foil? No, don't get high right in front of me. I mean, I'm filming, so get high, but then, you know, you shouldn't. That's every single conversation goes like that. It's remarkable. And rather than do the hard work, working almost on an individualized level with these people day in and day out until they get into a shelter, you harass them until they get into the shelter because otherwise they're just going to die out on the streets. They're just, oh, let's just do Plymouth Housing. Let's just put them in housing. You don't think there's going to be any problem just throwing someone who right now refuses to go into treatment that they need, just putting them in a house? You think nothing's going to go wrong? Tasha May is a former Plymouth Housing employee.
It just bothers me that people are capitalizing off of other people's lives and other people's hardship. I have so many emails that I saved that of me saying, do you guys, like, this is what's happening. We need security here. They would send someone, they would do one round, and they would leave.
Yeah. So in other words, she says they don't take security seriously. We know that the folks there don't take drug use seriously, in my view. I mean, we played audio yesterday out of Snohomish County and their council. You had a very common sense ordinance that simply said, we will test for drug contamination in these units. And the Democrats said, no, we can't allow for that. But what if it's so bad that it exceeds state standards? Oh, yeah. What are those standards based on? Meth labs. That's like really high. Oh, but not housing? No, a meth lab. That's higher, right? That would likely be a higher standard because meth is supposed to be there. It's called a meth lab. It's in the name. And you're telling me if that place is contaminated, you are okay living in it, having someone live in it? Well, a homeless person, yeah. I mean, their lives aren't as valuable, let's be honest. That's how they treat it. Why not just acknowledge that? Why not just say you don't view homeless lives as mattering? They're not as important. they truly are props for you to use, for you to take a selfie in front of while you're giving them an oat milk latte that they didn't even ask for, to say, I fed the homeless today. Hashtag, I'm a hero. That's all they're doing it for. And they're ignoring all the data that shows what does and does not work. They just go down the path that they want to go down because they think it makes them look good. It doesn't. And by the way, you just guarantee that more and more and more people will continue to live wasted lives. I mean, just talk. I guarantee you these folks who are making these decisions at the county level or the city level, like politicians, have never actually gone into an encampment and talked to the people who live there. Because what you find out very quickly is that they are delusional. And I mean that not in a mean way. I mean that literally, sincerely, they are delusional. I'm talking to a guy yesterday who says, they don't even know that we're here. We're forgotten. We're ignored. I'm like, dude, we're literally here. We're standing right in front of you. You just had a camera crew here yesterday. You just told me that you've been offered treatment, but unless it's methadone, you're not going to do it. So what does it mean to not be ignored? Oh, no. I don't know. And I don't say that to make fun of them either. They are dealing with significant issues. The guy I spoke to, all of them I spoke to yesterday, they were all drug addicts. Every single one of them. Every single one. And of course, when I said, well, where do you get the money for the drugs? I don't want to say that on camera. Okay, it's fine. I kind of already knew the answer. We had one dude who had a huge piece of tinfoil stuck to his pants as he was talking to us. Yeah. Meanwhile, King County council members who care so little about unincorporated King County that probably have never even stepped foot in it, even after getting lost, passed a bill out of a committee establishing a $20.29 minimum wage. $20.29 minimum wage. Now, none of this is ever about employees. It really never is. They tell you that. It's all about helping people. Nah, not really. You get lectured by people like Teresa Mosqueda, who's formerly of the council of a city we try not to talk to during this segment. She failed out of the Seattle City Council. She ended up going into the King County Council so she can continue her scam. She pretends to understand what it is she's talking about.
When workers have more to spend, they spend more in their local economies. They spend more on pizza. They spend more on ice cream. They spend it on groceries and rent.
Diabetes,
they spend
meditation.
It in their local economies and in small businesses.
Okay. You can tell that she was really coming from a passionate place of knowledge by the fact that she was reading it unenthusiastically from script. So what she just said is verifiably false. Everything she just said is verifiably false. And it's made even worse by the fact that when you have a city right next door to unincorporated King County that has a different minimum wage, it kind of has a little bit of an effect on that quote unquote local economy. You are now forcing some to compete unfairly because others have higher minimum wages, some have lower minimum wages. Same way, somehow, higher taxes, lower taxes, all of these things actually play a role. And when you force a company to take on a larger expense, particularly the food industry, those pizza shops and ice cream shops that apparently are all over unincorporated King County, I guess I've missed those, you do realize that that ends up costing them profit, and restaurants are razor thin in their profit margin. So what do they do? Any ideas, Jackson? What do they do when they have to take on higher costs?
Lay people off. Or
lay people off? What else? Raise their prices.
Oh, well, yeah, that too.
It's kind of an obvious one, right?
Yeah.
It's the obvious one. It's so obvious you didn't think of it first because it's that obvious.
That was a trick question.
But Teresa Mosqueda pretends that that's not the case because now you have more money at least to afford that pizza that was 79 cents cheaper yesterday. But good news is you got an extra 34 cents. After taxes. Okay, no, so now you're really screwed. You're worse off now than you were before. There was public comment. Both sides made their arguments.
We wish we were part of the Maple Valley city limits and this didn't impact us, but we're half a mile away from it. So just by virtue of being half a mile away, it's going to completely crater our business.
That's Calvin Freeman. He's the owner, co-owner of Cascadia Pizza. He makes the point perfectly. How do we compete as a business, just from a price standpoint, with that pizza shop 5 minutes away that, because they're not getting hit with these high prices on labor, they can lower the cost of a slice of pizza? How do we compete with that? Our pizza has to be $3. Theirs get to be $2. How is that fair? How are you helping us? And then you had the MLK labor rep, Shawnee Wheeler James, who doesn't represent or understand businesses, talking about, through the lens of union interests, why this is actually good for business.
We know that minimum wage does not hinder growth. It stimulates economic activity, both benefiting businesses and workers.
I mean, that's why people often pay $100,000 an hour, because it stimulates the economy. And the higher you go, obviously, the more stimulation for the economy, right?
Why didn't we think of this earlier?
God, you know what? We are so dumb. Just raising the minimum wage will make the economy stronger, which helps everyone. Let's make the minimum wage $1 billion, right? Let's just go all in. Why do they stop at $20.29? Why not $30? Is there a point in which there's no more benefit? I'm just curious, because they'll never say that, by the way. They just say, oh, just raise it. Okay, so it should be $50, right?
Yes.
What's the argument against it? It helps everyone. There's no negative effect at all.
How did they get to 29 cents, too? Like, down to the cent?
It's all made up. Oh, my God. And as is always the case, there are a whole bunch of different exemptions. For example, employers with 15 or fewer employees that have a gross revenue of less than $2 million, your hourly minimum wage rate is $3 less at $17.29. So what's curious about that is, don't those workers deserve a living wage? Why? You're punishing them because they choose to work for a smaller business? That's rude. Oh, this isn't really about the employees. This is just about redistribution of wealth and going after corporations and telling them how they're supposed to operate. Got it. Thanks. Cool. Appreciate it. Glad we're all on the same page. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, you get to choose the story. Story number one, an actor you forgot was alive, Billy Dee Williams, did an interview with Bill Maher that absolutely left him stunned. It has to do with blackface. Ooh, what did he say? Or story number two, squatters took over Gordon Ramsay's $16 million London pub. They're served papers to leave, but they're not. Which story should we discuss? 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.
You pick the topic on The Jason Rand Show.
Indeed you do, and it's actually a tie. Every once in a while we get a tie. So I'm going to try to squeeze in both stories. We'll start with Billy Dee Williams. He's a guy from that movie that one time that I think I might have seen. Star Wars?
He was in Star Wars.
Okay. So he was in that movie where I think I saw a scene and haven't actually watched a full Star Wars episode except for the new ones. He did the podcast that Bill Maher hosts where they're in his basement and we're not supposed to be creeped out by this, and they're always getting high and drinking whiskey, I guess, something. I don't know. What do people who want to show their masculinity drink? Bourbon?
Yeah, right? Probably. Just a bourbon. Or scotch, maybe.
Yeah, scotch and a blunt, I guess, for Bill Maher. I'm not kidding. That's what they do on this stupid show. And they do sometimes get into interesting conversations. I never thought I would care about anything Billy Dee Williams said. I actually really did thought, I thought he was dead. But they got into his admiration for Laurence Olivier, who is an actor. He was an actor. He was called out, but actually not called out. He was praised, let's just say, by Billy Dee Williams for one particular portrayal, and it got into a conversation about blackface.
Here's the thing. Today, I mean, they would never let you do that.
Why?
Blackface?
Why not?
Because
you should do it.
That's your point of view.
If you're an actor, you should do anything you want to do.
That's a great point of view, but the theater would be bombed.
He's 100% correct. The theater would be bombed, and Billy Dee Williams is 100% correct. If you are an actor, you should be able to actually do what the title of your profession says you do, which is act. Now, there's a difference between donning blackface to mock black people versus playing someone who's wearing blackface for some reason. There are characters who might do that. Now, he's obviously not talking, just go ahead and put on blackface and go take on a role. What he's doing there is addressing this bigger cultural shift that the woke left has created and pushed through, which is if it's a gay character, it has to be played by a gay actor. If it's someone who is disabled, you have to get an actor who is disabled in the exact same way. Doesn't matter if you've got Leonardo DiCaprio, who said, I desperately want to play this part. Well, it's a Jewish character. Can't have you. Sorry. But I'm the best person for the job. I guarantee you an Oscar nomination. Yeah, no, sorry, we can't do it. I mean, we wouldn't even get that Oscar nomination under the new rules going into effect this year, which means we have to have certain numbers of quote-unquote BIPOC actors or behind-the-scenes writers, producers, makeup artists, etc. If we don't qualify. We have to give X amount of time to certain characters who check some boxes. And he's calling all of that out in that comment. I'm assuming he knows why, he truly knows why it's not allowed right now, quote-unquote not allowed. But he's obviously pushing back, and he's right. I don't understand why we pretend that this matters. If you're telling me that certain casting directors are purposefully saying, I don't want any black person in this movie, don't go to the movie. I think we should call that out. It seems kind of racist to me. But if you're telling me the reason why they don't want a black person for a role is because you are, you know, casting George Washington, okay, that makes sense to me. He either is Puerto Rican or he's white. Got the joke?
Yeah, because Lin-Manuel Miranda is Puerto Rican.
But that's the whole thing. So they made the choice for Hamilton to choose people who were not white. They did that intentionally. Why is that okay? Because it's not white. If they chose everyone because they happen to be gay or trans, they specifically said, we're not going to hire straight people. They would be lauded. It's so brave. It's so cool what they did. Why? Isn't it the same? Should a gay actor play a straight role if a straight actor can't play a gay role?
It's all very confusing, Jason.
But no, it's not confusing. Shouldn't that be the rule then?
Yes.
Now, is that fair to a gay actor who happens to be really great at what they do?
No.
Do they have to come out in order to get a certain role? People who just aren't comfortable coming out?
They shouldn't.
You know? I'm waiting for the movie that has a 7-year-old who's trans.
Just you wait.
I'm sure it's already in development. I'm sure it's already been filmed. It's just waiting for release. But it stifles creativity. It stifles one's ability to actually act. The whole point is not to get someone who is precisely the same off screen as they would on screen. And please spare me this whole, if there were quote unquote white characters and it was integral to the movie. Let's say it was, remember, you don't remember this one, I shouldn't even say it. Losing Isaiah was a movie starring Halle Berry and some actress who's very well known, whose name I can't remember because she's old. And it's a white parent who gains temporary custody for an adoption. She's basically trying to get this kid adopted who's black. The kid, their mother, is Halle Berry. Now, that was a movie that played on racial dynamics. That was a key part of the plot. Should the white character have been black? How do you do that film?
Yeah.
How do you do that film? You can't. You cannot do that film. So you're getting in the way of a story. Or would you say, well, you know, because you're talking about a subject that we want you to talk about in a way we want you to talk about it, well, we'll give you a pass. That's called a woke pass. Well, you got it. It's just, how do you create art that way? And by the way, if you're the actor who got the job because they were checking a box, don't you feel insulted? Wouldn't you rather get a job because you earned it? And it's unfair to the ones who did earn it, but unfortunately work in a world in which the wokesters say, well, we're only going to give it to you because of a characteristic.